It's time for Twig This Week at Google. Jeff Jarvis is out of the country, but we are fortunate to have Aunt Pruitt join us along with Stacey Higginbotham. We'll talk about folding phones. We'll talk about 5G. Stacey will explain all to us about 5G. We need a little help. And we'll worry about how you pronounce amicus curiae. It's all coming up, and why you might want to pronounce it. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, episode 497, recorded Wednesday, February 27th, 2019. Hermione said so. This Week in Google is brought to you by Thousand Eyes. Companies that run in the cloud rely on Thousand Eyes. It's the place they go first to see, understand, and improve the digital experience of their cloud-based applications and services. Do the cloud right and improve services for your customers and employees today. Visit ThousandEyes.com/twit. And by Capterra. Find the right software for your business with over 750,000 reviews of products from real software users. Check out Capterra's free website to find the right tools to make 2019 the year for your business at capterra.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we talk about the latest news in the Googleverse, which really doesn't mean just Google, but Facebook, Twitter, the internet as a whole. We also talk a lot about journalism and media. Jeff Jarvis, our journalism guru, is taking the week off because he's in Oxford, England, and he says, I don't have good enough internet to do the show. But Stacey Higginbotham is here, in her, and she apparently has taken over Jeff's wood-lined paneled study. So, hi, Stacey, from Stacey on IoT, and at Giga Stacey on the Twitters. She has a great podcast to on the Internet of Things with about Chromebooks. Kevin Toefel, there I got
so
two plugs in one.
That was nice.
And that other long, tall drink of water there—that's Aunt Pruitt. He has contributed to Tech Republic and always a welcome visitor to our shores. Hi, Aunt.
Hey, Mr. Laporte.
Great to see you.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. None of us were in Barcelona over the weekend, much as I would have loved to, but that's what happened with Mobile World Congress. Microsoft announced its new HoloLens 2 and finally just gave up on the idea of making it a consumer product and said, nah, it's all about business. And I had an insight earlier today on Windows Weekly that I think I'm just thick. But as a tech guy, I kind of think about the gadgets, the products, the shiny stuff, and less about the backbone. And what I realized is this HoloLens 2 announcement was really put it in high relief for me, is Microsoft makes these things not because they want to sell these things, Surface, HoloLens, even Xbox. It's not so much about those products. Yeah, sure, they make some money on them. But really what Microsoft is, and they've never changed since day one, was a platform company. The platform used to be Windows. When Satya Nadella, their new CEO, came along 5 years ago, he said, you know, this Windows desktop operating systems don't have that much of a future. You know what has a future? The cloud. And he said that our new platform is the cloud, is Azure. And now, if I contextualize it there, HoloLens makes a lot of sense because all throughout the demo, they're talking about the enterprise uses of it, which require Azure and Dynamics 365, their enterprise business platform. And then suddenly, it all kind of makes sense to me that that's really what HoloLens is all about. In fact, they really established how open it is because they showed one person wearing the HoloLens visor. It's an augmented reality visor. And he's working on an engine. And somebody else is using an iPad to see the same thing, which Microsoft would never have said that in the past. But it's really a platform for them. So I think that's really an interesting, to me, that's an important insight because it tells us why Microsoft does what they do.
And it's, in addition to being a platform for it's an AR platform. It's not just a platform for heads up displays, right?
Right.
So if you think about it across a number of devices, they're just trying to figure out What do people want to do with it? What kind of software designs do we need to think about? How will people interact with it?
Absolutely. But realize that ultimately, whatever the design is, however people use it, it will all hook up to their platform, which is Azure, mm-hmm. right? And they showed a conferencing thing that, you know, uses Azure. They showed remote, you know, telemedicine. It's all Azure based. It's all in the cloud. And that's really what they're selling.
That's the difference between a company like Microsoft and the other ones. It's not about viral. It's about legacy. It's about, you know, who's going to be here, you know, 10 years from now, 20 years from now. And that's the type of thinking you got to have and not worry about the big hit right now. So it's going to stick around.
As we know, platform is kind of a nice play. Microsoft got really big by creating a platform that other people used. And somebody once asked Bill Gates, well, you didn't really get all the extract the maximum profit you could have out of Windows. A lot of other people made money on Windows. He said, actually, that's the measure of a platform, that the partners make more money than the platform creator. But the good news is the platform creator gets a chunk of all of that.
Yep.
And the reason I've been thinking about it is because Apple, which was a device maker and made all its money on devices, is faced with this issue going forward that their sales are slowing down and they don't have the next big thing. And they're doing the same thing. They're suddenly pivoting to the cloud. They're saying the future, don't pay attention to device sales anymore. The future is revenue per customer based on their use of our services. And services is really just another word for cloud. And that kind of all makes sense to me.
With regards to Apple, I think it's more along the lines of they're saying, you know what? We made our phones a little too expensive and people are not going to buy them every other year. They're going to buy them, every 4 years or so at the most. So let's find a way to keep the shareholders from panicking and saying, hey, we're focusing more on the ecosystem, you know?
Well, Microsoft must have enjoyed the Samsung event a week ago and other announcements at Mobile World Congress, because suddenly the iPhone is no longer the most expensive phone by any means. Samsung's Galaxy Fold will start at almost $2,000. And this is the Huawei Mate X, and it's going to start closer to $3,000. And so I think that's good news for Apple. It establishes a new kind of price point way out there, so Apple might not look like the most expensive player. What do you think of these foldable phones? Stacey, do you want one?
I do. I want one so badly, but I can't justify the price.
Yeah. I think initially it'll be one of those products where people will buy it either because they have more disposable income than anybody or because they want to show everybody that they have more disposable income. Because it'd be very obvious if you took out a Mate X from your pocket and unfolded it, oh, that guy's loaded. Right? That's a status symbol. How about
that's what
you?
They used to say about the iPhone.
Right. It is. But it's no longer, is it, a status symbol to have an iPhone? Because everybody's
got one. Now anybody has an iPhone.
So what do you think, Ann? Are you as a photographer, you must be in. No. He's shaking his head. No.
No foldable phones for you?
$2,000.
Yeah.
You lost me at $2,000. See, I'm going to spend $2,000, I can go out and get a Sony A7 R2 right now.
That's a camera. A very nice camera, by the way.
Right. You know, and that's not even the newest model.
Right. Yeah, but on the other hand, if you think of this as instead of just an accessory, your phone, as one of your primary, if not your primary computers, then is it too much?
I just bought a MacBook Pro, which is a fancy, expensive computer for like $1,800.
Oh.
So,
it's even
so
more
no.
Than that. No. Yeah, but you can't fold your MacBook Pro up and put it in your pocket.
But I also can't run Premiere Pro on that thing either.
Yeah. That's going to be an interesting thing. In fact, that's one of the things we talked about on MacBreak Weekly yesterday. The rumor mill says Apple's moving first to ARM chips in the next couple of years, and then second to a unified operating system, iOS and macOS. And at that point, Adobe will develop for all three, I would guess. So you would be
that would be cool.
Yeah,
that would be cool. But I look at. This is my opinion when it comes to these OEMs and these high-priced phones. You're putting all of these specs in there as if the mass market is a bunch of power users.
Right.
And I can't assume that the mass market is power users. Everybody is out there just taking selfies and sending Facebook messages and WhatsApp and all of that. They don't really need that much horsepower. They don't really need all of the extra pixels on the screen. Now, if you want to be a content creator or what have you, I get that. But at the same time, it's still a dadgum phone, and it shouldn't cost me more than $1,000.
Well, but don't these companies, I mean, in order to move forward, they're going to develop phones that are very expensive initially, and the price would come down. If they said the new, anything new we do has to be affordable for the masses, we wouldn't see a lot of new developments, would we?
Let's look at what makes a fold. I mean, what are the components of a foldable screen? Because that's what we've got to assess. Like, are there economies of scale that can be derived from that type of
manufacturing process? Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Any screen gets cheaper as you make more of them and as you refine the process. I mean, remember the first LCD screens, the problem was dead pixels, and they got better and better at making them, and the price went down because more and more of the screens came out without defect. They didn't have to reject as many. And so
but that had a, well, it wasn't just a defect thing. It was a semiconductor or a wafer kind of
Yeah, it's a process model. Problem. Yeah.
So, but are foldable screens that same?
God knows. I don't know how they make them. They're polymer. Okay. We know that. They're plastic. They've got to be probably somewhat like OLED screens. I think these OLED screens, this is a Samsung Galaxy Note 9, and they have a little bit of a curve, don't they, on the edge as they come down here. So it'd be my guess that this OLED material is somewhat like the material that will be used in these folding phones.
I do wonder
what the fold's going to, how it's going to handle all those bends. Oh. Yeah.
You
don't have to ask. There's only three of us.
Well, she said she would get one of those phones, you know, but she couldn't justify the price. My question is why?
Yeah, what do you like about it? Yeah.
I like having a big screen, but I hate something that doesn't fit in my pocket. So this solves, well, theoretically, this solves this problem. And I like playing with new interfaces. I like, because that's like, when you can see the future is when you see something that you use it and you're like, oh my gosh, this totally changes how I look at this type of device or maybe this workflow. And I have a feeling, I could be wrong, that this type of foldable phone thing could actually do that for me. So that's why I would want one.
Do you think, it doesn't feel to me that this came out of a lot of focus grouping and testing and research. It feels like they just said, what can we do next? Oh, I know, foldable.
No, phones have had a very real constraint. Like as they got bigger and bigger, people started complaining more about them not fitting in their pockets and all of these other things. But people still bought the big screens because they like the big screens. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there is an actual, I don't know if it's really a problem per se, but there is an actual need for something that does this.
I do appreciate the innovation because I was getting smartphone fatigue because everything pretty much looks the same for the last 6-7 years. You know, you go to a store and say, show me your flagship phone. It's going to look like the one that's right next to it. It's not a flagship.
One glass slab is much like the other. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I appreciate the innovation, but I just don't see the need for the fold. I just don't.
And we might be in this area of kind of wacky interfaces, wacky new designs. There was I can't think of the name of the phone that's a watch.
Oh, yeah.
A bracelet.
Yeah, there were a couple of, I think of them as slap bracelets. There are a couple of phones that you wear around your wrist. Here's one from TCL. This is a concept, so not available yet. In fact, this was the year of goofy, weird designs. And again, I don't feel like these were in response to demand. These are more like, let's throw spaghetti against the wall and see what sticks.
Well, you know, yeah, but no one demanded the Amazon Echo, for example.
Right.
And I feel like right now, and especially when we think about 5G and not like super hyped 5G, but think about where we are with, we have really ubiquitous, fast broadband connections pretty much everywhere, either mobile or fixed. We've got computing that is incredibly powerful, power efficient, both in the cloud and on the device. And so if you start, and now we're pulling all this contextual data from applications and sensors around us and doing things with it, it feels like we're ripe for some sort of new innovation in like a paradigm shift in computing. And I hate that phrase, paradigm shift, but I think it could happen.
Would you wear this? Look at this. This is Nubia's Alpha Watch. It's a phone. It's a watch. It looks actually almost steampunk in its design.
I would not.
Yeah. I think it's kind of bizarre.
I would wear something like that if there was like a hearing component, like a in-ear.
Look at this. This is the...
Oh yeah!
Now it really,
that's like my wrist size, right?
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, now it really does look like something steampunky. Wow. maybe the wrist isn't the right place to put this display. I'm just saying.
It's tough. And what about, why do you need?
You're trying.
You can put a display anywhere, and what becomes really exciting is when you have, I think, the interface mostly in your ear and a display anywhere you need one. Is personally what I'm excited about.
What about a heads-up display? I mean, the HoloLens right now is ridiculous. You're not going to walk around wearing that. But this is early days. What if they got it down to the size of something like maybe some...
The North glasses?
Yeah.
I always refer back to Daniel Suarez.
Yes, exactly. And Demon and Frieden. That's right. Yeah.
I would take that any day because the way it's described in the book is those glasses look like just regular... high-end stylish glasses, but I don't think anybody's been able to do that just yet.
It's early days. HoloLens, at least, is fully, encapsulated. There's no tether. There's 3-hour battery life. Okay, that's low, but the full computer and everything's in the band.
It is heavy. I have worn HoloLens.
The new one's 3 times more comfortable, Stacey.
That's
what Microsoft says. Yeah, 3 times more comfortable. It's more like a hat now. Remember when you put on the original HoloLens, it was a lot of knob twiddling and fiddling.
Yeah,
to get it
you
to
had
fit.
Like this like Frankenstein.
Yeah, they don't do that anymore. It goes on. It's much more comfortable, apparently, and it's more balanced. I think it's probably not much lighter, but it's balanced, and that's kind of...
That's true. There was a lot of weight on your nose.
Yeah, you don't want it pulling you forward. Yeah.
But, I see, because I go to these industrial user group conferences, I actually see people using the HoloLens.
Right.
Get demos of that, and
right.
I've changed out weird chests and, like, swapped out things using HoloLens demos where they're, like... And it's very effective, and it is... super cool, and I can see why Microsoft is investing here, and there is demand for that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
Especially on the industrial side.
Yeah, and we know Google Glass still sells in industrial applications. It's a little lot. It's not a heads-up display as much as like a monitor over your eyebrow.
Yeah, I remember going to Mobile World Congress. It was the only time I went. I think it was 2016, and there was a big company, I think it was Fujitsu, that showed off just having some type of little Google Glass looking device on, and you're basically a line worker at a factory, and you're able to do your inventory and inspect the parts and things like that just from looking at it. And I thought it was pretty outstanding tech and could be used everywhere with these big manufacturing companies, but I don't know who's all buying into it. And now it seems like that would be perfect for HoloLens stuff.
That's what they use it for. So like Emerson, who else is like Emerson? Honeywell, trying to think, not Xerox, Tetra Pak, actually. You know, the people who make the aseptic milk containers?
Mm-hmm.
Tetra Pak actually uses HoloLens in their factories. A lot of times it's used for... training or repair of machines. So understanding what's happening inside a machine, it's all part of like Microsoft's digital twin product. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, where they've got a replica of a really big expensive machine and all the sensor data comes into that.
Yeah, that's what they showed people repairing, learning how to repair. They showed surgeons learning how to do heart surgery in the operating room, just reviewing the procedure and then doing it. I think there's a huge amount of use for this, but I'll tell you where I feel like we are. We're in the maybe the 90s or even the 80s when we saw a lot of technologies like the Newton and the Palm and internet technologies and other converging. And it took 10 years, but by 2007, they converged onto the iPhone and BlackBerry and they converged. And now, I mean, that 10 years later, it's completely changed computing, how we use computing, how we think of computing. It's a huge shift. I think we're at those early stages where you're starting to see the convergence of new technologies coming in. When you have voice-activated technologies, that's going to be critical for user interface, because user interface on any of these is very difficult. You see voice-activated coming in. You see screens in a heads-up display or a variety of places, experimentation with where a screen would be, because you do need a readout of some kind. My money's on a heads-up display, and you do see a lot of those. You see artificial intelligence, too, and that's, I think, going to be very important, because any wearable has to know a lot about the environment, just like a self-driving car has to know where it's going. The wearable, and I think all the demos right now are in very constrained environments, just as all the speech demos are very constrained vocabularies. But once you evolve these things, imagine having the same kind of heads-up display you have now in a factory floor in the arbitrary real world. And that's where AI and things like time-of-flight sensors, which those are the 3D sensors that are on the HoloLens and are very similar to the LiDAR used on automobiles, self-driving cars. I think all of that is starting to come together. It's got to get miniaturized. It's got to get more effective. But I ultimately see the future of computing, and maybe it's 10, maybe it's 20 years out, as something like that, something that maybe they're not going to look like. They don't have to look like, you know, stylish glasses, spectacles. They can look a little clunky, not like HoloLens clunky, but they can be a little clunkier because we'll get used to it. But I see people wearing those and using that as their primary computing platform and using speech, AI, cameras, heads-up displays that can turn into screens.
I'm going to argue with you a little bit.
Okay.
I think you're close. I think what is actually, like, I think the computing, there will be computing on your body, some sort of computer that is a smartphone, or maybe we get to the point where it could be a headset. We're not there for a while. Yep. But I think what happens with displays is actually anything around you will be a display, will get a standard that has it interact with you, so you can pull up your display in front of you on any screen. So many surfaces will become screens. Either projected,
that's right,
interface with them.
That's right. And by your proximity, you'll make it yours.
Right.
I completely agree.
So that's my hunch. Because I think the HoloLens and those kind of heads-up displays are good in industrial. They're very expensive. You do need a lot of computing power to do that. And they solve a really real problem, but it's not a real problem that we all have every day, I don't think, today. So,
well, it's not that it's solving a problem. It's ubiquitous computing, right? We're moving in that direction.
Yes, that's why I was talking about that whole paradigm shift.
Yeah. That's ubiquitous computing. To me, though, there is a data point with these foldable screens, which is we do want better screens wherever we are. I think you're right that maybe that whatever screen is near you is the one that you use. And if screens are everywhere, then it won't matter if you carry one with you. But you will carry a personal computing device of some kind that knows your preference. Maybe not. Maybe that'll be a mesh that's everywhere. And when I
no.
get no, no, because no. privacy, right? You want to keep it to yourself.
Privacy, yeah. Lack of standards. Yeah. We're not going to get there.
Lack of standards would be a real hardship, because you, and that might even be the hardship with the screen thing.
That is the hardship with the screens.
Yeah.
That is one of the hardships. But
we know computing's moving to the edges. We know ubiquitous computing is the trend. And I think looking at new interfaces is really what's going on right now. And I think a wearable glasses makes a lot of sense. Earpieces, certainly it's the stuff of science fiction. You see this in science fiction all the time. Just as you saw the iPad in 2001, not the year, the movie. the year was 1977 or something like that. Yeah. All right. That was our speculative section.
that was Leo goes off on a speculative tangent.
Goes on a tangent. There are also camera phones now. Ansa photographer, like the Nokia PureView, which is I'm calling it the spider phone because it looks the cameras look like a spider's eye. It looks like there's seven cameras. There's only five, but there's a flash, and there's some other sensor in it. But it's really, it's kind of creepy looking. The Nokia 9, and I presume because Nokia's PureView, that was the one that was 41 megapixels on the Windows phone, right? That was their brand for that.
That's correct.
That they're probably each of these five cameras is a 12 megapixel sensor. Two of the five shoot in color. The other three are monochrome. And the idea is you can then merge these shots into one ultra-detailed shot. What do you think?
I love the idea. I wonder how efficient it is because essentially that's what Apple and Google are already doing right now with their
that's right.
camera technology. So I'm guessing having that additional hardware supposedly makes it easier to do that stuff, but I don't know. I'd like to see it in action. I hope it doesn't go by the wayside the way that Lumia did, years ago.
That's right.
Yellow phone.
Did you ever have a Lumia?
I knew one person that had it. Yeah. I tried it for, when it was time to switch phones, and I remember playing around with it in the store, but Windows Phone just didn't do anything for me.
So look at these images. Now, of course, you're looking at them over a Skype connection, and this is a web view of it. This is The Verge. I thought what's interesting about these is the color is very neutral. It's probably super accurate. The details.
Which is a good thing when it comes to processing images. You want that leeway.
Right. That, the colors on most camera phones today, Samsung's a particular violator, this are ultra bright, popped, over sharpened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it makes people happy.
Right.
Yeah. But Samsung knows who its market is too. They're going after the people that likes all the bubbly stuff
and right.
gimmicky stuff.
This is really interesting.
Well, it's not just bubbly and gimmicky. It looks good even if you're a sucky photographer, which...
That's the key. That's Instagram right there in a nutshell.
Well, you said it, not me.
I'm like, as a person who is not a great photographer, I'm like, yeah, I like being able to take photos that look good. I'm like, neat.
I have to say, this was a good Mobile World Congress if you like different, if you like innovation / crazy.
I know, I should have done this instead of CES, which was Snoozeville.
Yeah. Well, a lot of tech conferences have been Snoozeville over the last few years because...
We're jaded and old.
We're at peak. Nah, we're kind of at peak phone, peak computer. Here's Oppo's version of the foldable phone. They've gone the Huawei direction of having the screen on the outside, not the inside. Oppo.
See, I just think these are so neat.
Yeah.
The thickness is what I question, though, because I can remember at one time when everybody wanted a thinner device.
Right.
Oh, well, yeah. No, right. And they are thick, but again, they're thick and they fit in your pocket. So.
Yeah, what's more important to you, big screen or thinness?
To me, it's pocket.
I know what you don't want is this phone. This is from Energizer. It has an 1,800 milliamp hour battery in it.
Man, I got a press release about that thing, and I laughed so hard. And I'm thinking, who in their right mind wants that? That's, oh my goodness.
This is Vlad Savov from
The
Verge.
That's my trade show phone.
Yeah, well, it's a phone if you had to go to the Antarctic or something and were unsure about where you'd be able to charge next. It's so weird, though, when you look at this picture, is it looks like they've kind of just glued a regular smartphone on top of a big battery charger. And I bet you that's what it is. You can even use this as a battery charger. Isn't that so weird looking?
Energizer has surprised me because at CES they were showing off, it's the company that does Monster Cables. They have the licensing deal for Energizer for smart home products. So they were showing off, connected outlets, connected doorbell cams, connected light strips for like very cheap. And I was just like, Energizer, what are you doing?
Yeah,
but maybe they're apparently all in on this.
Yeah, well,
or they license their name to be all.
Yeah,
in
I don't
this.
Sure who's because they're not making any of this.
No,
so maybe they're just licensing their name. Then there's companies like LG, which really didn't do anything new or different, and then they just don't get the coverage, right? It's got you know.
Well, this has a time of flight sensor in it, the thin Q.
Right.
Which,
is that required, you know, is it for face, for true good face ID? I think so, maybe.
Yes, because it gives you depth.
Right.
So it can't be fooled by like a flat photo of the person.
And I have to say, as I said, I ordered the Samsung Galaxy S10 Plus, and I'd be very interested. They are using an ultrasonic fingerprint reader as opposed to an optical fingerprint reader, and they do it through the screen. And everybody who tried it said it really works. It's fast, and you don't have – it's not super picky about where you put your finger. I think that's great.
Yeah, able to get your grooves. Get your grooves on.
Get the grooves on through the ultrasound.
And ultrasonic sensors are cheap.
Oh, are they? Interesting.
I don't know about theirs in particular, but in general, they've been around for a long time and they're pretty cheap.
Let's take a break because I think the real story at Mobile World Congress is all about 5G. And Stacey Higginbotham is our 5G guru. At least she knows more than I do, which is not saying that much. But
and me.
There's a lot of announcements, including some steps back. We'll talk about that in just a second. As we continue this week in Google, the Jarvis-less version. It's a whole different show when Jeff's not here.
There is no media discussion.
And I don't say that in a bad way. It's just a different show. But he'll be back.
No Article 13 and 12 or 11?
I checked just to see. And this is the new European Copyright Act, which is really going to be devastating if it goes through to content creators, people even like us. Because Article 13 will require a license. There won't be any fair use or license to use any copyrighted material in anything you do, including news and commentary. And no more memes, no more, we'd have to shut off our feed to Europe. The good news is that there is a mounting drumbeat against it. Some people are already starting to, because there's an election coming up, for members of the EU Parliament, there are people saying, hey, this is going to be a litmus test. If you vote for Article 11 and 13, then we're not going to vote for you. That's the kind of pressure we need to exert because it would be disastrous. But so far, last I checked, and I just visited Julia Reda's blog, nothing more since last week. Our show today brought to you by Thousand Eyes. I love Thousand Eyes. I had never heard of them. That's just because I'm ignorant. But I went to an event of theirs where they talked about how their sensors, which are all over the internet, were able to learn all sorts of interesting things about cloud providers and pros and cons to consider when you choose a cloud provider. But Thousand Eyes can provide that same kind of immediate and unmatched view of all the networks, all the dependencies that impact you and your users' digital experience. That is amazing. They shouldn't really call it 1,000 eyes because it's more like 1,000,000 eyes. There are sensors everywhere from the inner internet all the way out to the edge. Look, we know many of you are going to the cloud. You do gain agility, but you increase risk. And this is scary for a lot of IT teams and companies. You lose a little bit of control. Your stuff's sitting out there. And it's hard when a cloud app or a service goes down. How do you know what went wrong? And I liken this to you're trying to peer through a dirty window, trying to figure out what's going on out there. Meanwhile, you're losing revenue. Employee productivity is shot. You're damaging your brand in some cases. And that's why they have it as a puffy little cloud, right? Because who knows what's going on in there? Thousand Eyes knows. It's like taking a squeegee to that dirty window and suddenly you can see instant visibility into the entire service delivery path from the cloud to your end user. And these aren't your little sensors. These are Thousand Eyes. So it includes portions you neither own nor control. Look at, these are the kinds of things Thousand Eyes sees. It's not like anything you've ever seen before. The story of Thousand Eyes is great. This was originally a research project at UCLA. The founder of Thousand Eyes realized that they could find this great information, this valuable information to any company that's operating in the cloud. And they created Thousand Eyes. Mohit was great, by the way. I met him at this event.
They launched at the GigaOm Structure event back in the day. Yes, they were one of my favorite companies ever, and it was so cool.
See, you're smart. So you got it. When they came up on stage, you understood what they were doing.
Yes, even before. That's why I put them on stage.
Yeah. Oh, you put them on stage.
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh,
these guys are legit.
I completely agree. Well, thank you for that unsolicited testimonial. Mohit Ladd and Ricardo Oliveira, they were at the UCLA Internet Research Lab. They were working on technologies to visualize autonomous system topologies. They got a $500,000 National Science Foundation grant because the NSF knew that we needed to understand DNS infrastructure issues. They decided to start Thousand Eyes in 2013. And man, in that time, they have really done well. And I'm very proud to have a partnership with them right now. I'm just so impressed. Old school IT monitoring does not work. As you probably know, it's passive. It's siloed, right? It's in your silo. You can, you know, or you use somebody's that can only see the data center. That's no use in the cloud. Thousand Eyes is cloud-based software built to help organizations do the cloud right. A massive array of vantage points spanning the entire global internet, cloud providers, right down to the Wi-Fi in your local coffee shop. Thousand Eyes' unique path visualization technology extends beyond any boundaries, allowing you to see, understand, and improve the experience for all your apps, services, and websites. It took me a while to really get what they're doing, but now that I do, I don't know how you could operate in a cloud environment without Thousand Eyes. Join the top banks, the enterprises, the SaaS companies, the world's largest and fastest growing brands that rely on Thousand Eyes to do the cloud and do it right. You want to find out more? Go to Thousand Eyes, all spelled out, thousandeyes.com/twit, and find out what you've been missing. They do have a great ebook. This would be good to give to the boss. 5 cloud migration challenges you shouldn't ignore. Great stuff in there. But also browse around the site because there's just some really good information there. thousandeyes.com/twit. And I'm very pleased to say, you should be too, Stacy, since you saw it at the very beginning. They're doing great. They're really doing well. Yay. Thrive in a connected world with Thousand Eyes. thousandeyes.com/twit. I had no idea you had that relationship with them. That's awesome. Yeah.
Sorry, I always forget that you're doing ads and I try to interrupt. I'm sorry.
No. As long as when you interrupt that way. You interrupt all you want. I'm not in the bubble. I didn't lower the cone of silence. You're always allowed to speak. So, and especially if it's something positive like that, that's always interesting. Yeah. I had no idea.
Ta-da. I'm A, old.
No.
B.
That was 7
formerly
years ago.
Formerly a deep cloud computing person.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
Well, So, Stacy's kind of one of those nerds who really, we used to call them wonks. Like, really loves the nuts and bolts, gets into the details, reads the white papers and stuff like that. And so we're very grateful to her because that way I can ask her questions. Jeff and I will say, what is that, Stacy? And she'll say, well, let me explain it to you. You're Hermione. Isn't she? She's Hermione. Jeff's Harry, and I'm that Weasley kid.
I was wondering who was going to be Harry.
She's Hermione, and she's just like, wow. You go, okay, yes, ma'am. So now we're going to 5G, and 5G was probably the big banner topic at Mobile World Congress. And when you see things like HoloLens and you see Microsoft talking about cloud, and clearly everybody's kind of, correct me if I'm wrong, Stacey, thinking about 5G, like planning for the future.
Yes.
The future, though, the road to the future is always bumpy. For instance, T-Mobile has announced that they're going to delay the launch of their 5G technology till later this year, not because their networks aren't ready. There's a glowering John Legere, but because the phones aren't out there.
Right. And that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, they're doing a millimeter wave network. And
that's the real thing, right?
Well, no. Oh. Yes, no. So 5G, when we talk about like the FCC, when they talk about 5G, they're talking about millimeter wave. When a carrier is talking about 5G, they might be talking about millimeter wave, but they might also be talking about the 3GPP standard for 5G.
That's the difference between a technology and a marketing term.
I mean, is the FCC using a marketing term? No, they're just allocating spectrum. That's what they're in. And the 3GPP standard, the 3GPP is the organization that governs all of your cellular standards.
So that's technology too. I mean, that's a real spec, right?
It's a radio. I mean, it's their radio spec.
Right. So the problem is people like AT&T and Verizon who call things 5G that aren't millimeter wave 5G. They're 4G enhanced.
AT&T is messing this up. Verizon is actually deploying over the millimeter wave spectrum. They're deploying fixed broadband or
for business.
Fixed mobile broadband.
But it's not the same. Wireless. It's not the 3GPP standard, though, right?
Right, because it's not cellular. And that's why. But are they using millimeter wave spectrum? Yes.
Okay.
And so that's why, and you know, you'll get people, the Qualcomm, every time I talk about this, the Qualcomm guys call me and they're like, Stacey, there is a standard and it's the 3GPP standard.
But, well, that's because they're making the chips for it, right?
Right. And that is a standard. So with T-Mobile, they're talking about both things. They're talking about using millimeter wave. They're also talking about phones that use the true cellular 5G radios.
So T-Mobile had initially said that they would have 30 cities with 5G by the end of last year. That didn't happen. Phones they thought would launch early this year, like now. There are phones. Still can't buy them.
I was going to say there are. There's
the Fold, the Galaxy Fold, which will be available for order April 26th, is 5G. Samsung also has a 5G S10. They haven't announced availability for that. There, you could buy a Moto X that has the promise of a 5G back, but there's no 5G back yet. And some of these phones announced at Mobile World Congress, I guess, will be 5G. The technology is settled, right? It's not that they're not. Do they lack the chips? Is that the problem?
No. The technology is settled. They're deploying the network. So you have to. I mean, you have to get the networks out.
It's
there.
It's a chicken and egg. I understand. And you need a phone and you need a network.
You also need a business case. And for a while, the carriers were kind of like, we're going to do this, but nobody really wanted it. No one wanted to upgrade. Look at the upgrade cycles on handsets now are like at 3 years.
That's slowed it down, hasn't it? Yeah.
So, yeah.
Although
it's really
you could
hard.
Make the case that that's one thing that will get people back in. If you have a phone that can go 5 times faster.
But it's unclear how much this is going to affect your overall performance because we don't have a huge use case. Like, remember when we went to LTE? That was in the midst of the iPhone sucking up everybody's data,
right.
And everyone's like,
So but when the FCC or the 3GPP talk about nominal speeds for 5G, that's if no one else is competing for that bandwidth at the head end.
Well, okay, it depends on a couple things. If you're talking about millimeter wave band, there's a lot of capacity available. So because these bands are really fat, you're looking at like 100 megahertz of spectrum all in one chunk that you could use to like just gigabits of data, right? So that's one thing. The radio, the 3GPP radio spec talks about using those bands. But it also works in other bands. And you're going to see like AT&T deploy over non-millimeter wave bands. You're going to see Verizon actually do that too, because millimeter wave bands perform horribly when going through buildings and that sort of thing. So you're going to need
so high frequency they get stopped by anything and they don't propagate very far either.
Yeah. So what you're going to see is kind of a blend of all of these technologies, and they're going to be organized and optimized on the carrier side, but they are going to be, you're only going to have what you need when you need it, if that makes sense. It's not going to, not everyone's going to have this massive gigabit connection.
So that explains. So The Verge is quoting Sprint CTO John Saw, who's was talking about this at Mobile World Congress. He said in one demo video they ran, somebody was shown getting 430 megabits per second. Which is nice, right? 430 mega. But Saw said, we don't really want to focus too much on speeds, but the experience. I don't know what that means. How is the experience of 5G different if you're not talking about it's faster?
Latency.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask. I'm thinking about just enough lanes on the highway, if you will. If I'm out at a football game or what have you, and it's a LTE area, and there's 200,000 people within a 5-mile radius, my phone is just going to struggle when it comes to getting data. Is this the benefit of having 5G? Is this a bigger highway or what?
So if you stick with the highway analogy, capacity, which is what we're talking about when we talk about things like 438 megabits per second down. So that's capacity. So that means everybody can, you know, you've got that much data can flow through that particular imaginary pipe because it's wireless. All right. And so if you have lots of people, it's a fat highway, lots of cars can still have a whole megabit to themselves, right? Now, 5G, where it really excels and where we're seeing a lot of emphasis from the carriers is on latency. So not only is the highway bigger, but I guess your car can speed faster is maybe the way to think about that. But it's lower latency, which will give you a better experience in some things.
All right. So data calls, database calls, right?
VoIP. Your car getting back and forth to the cloud.
You need low latency if you're using the cloud during your self-driving.
Yeah, vehicle. Or things even like speech recognition. Look at me in my phone. This is my phone hand. I did this with a small child, like a 4-year-old, wow. And I'm like, hey, ring, ring. And she's looking at me and I'm like, it's a phone. And she's like, hello?
That's really interesting. This no longer, she's doing, for those of you just listening, the, you know, the hang loose bra Hawaiian thing with the pinky and the thumb. It's the universal gesture for.
Yeah, I'm holding it to my thumb's by my ear, my pinky's by my hand.
But what you're pointing out is that no kid would recognize that as a phone call because that's not how that doesn't look like anything they've got. Wow.
So yes,
we'll be going, call me with the hands folding. Call me.
Call me. Okay, sorry, that was a total digression from latency, but. And think about it, like we always talk about it in like gaming, but your ADAS systems, also things like industrial IoT, they're looking at that. They're one of the things at Mobile World Congress was Qualcomm and Bosch got together and they're like, we're going to do research on not this generation of 5G, but 5G NR for the industrial IoT. And that is like super focused on low latency and uses something called deterministic networking. So there's a lot of flavors here with 5G, and one of the reasons is because so many industries need better broadband. So you're going to have 5G for industrial, you're going to have 5G for cars,
right.
You're going to have...
Yeah, and I think there are a lot of, somebody in our chat room said, a lot of people looking at it and saying, maybe I can replace my internet service, my landline-based internet service with 5G if it's fast.
And that's what, Verizon's doing.
Right. Sprint says they will launch their 5G network this May. Just took a few months off, in Atlanta, Chicago, Dallas, and Kansas City. Now, when this happens, right, it's not all of Dallas. It's parts of, it's whatever. You have to be in the right area.
Dallas is a huge area.
You know this, Stacey, because you were promised a lot in Austin and got none of it. Google Fiber didn't reach your curb.
I'm still sad about that.
5G will come to Houston, to LA, too. New York, Phoenix, and Washington by the first half of the year. Here, where? Charlotte?
Yeah, well, not 5G, but the Google Fiber discussion. They were supposed to be here in Charlotte, and that hasn't been working out so well. They got a lot of red tape.
If you don't have it now, you ain't getting it. I got bad news for you.
Right.
Google's pretty much given up on that. So Sprint will have 5G this year in a lot of markets. Again, you'll have to have a phone. You'll have to find a phone that works with 5G. Here's the good news, at least for me as a Google Fi subscriber, and maybe some of you are. Sprint said its 5G network will be part of Google Fi. So you'd need a Fi phone that's 5G compatible. Not clear if that's gonna happen. Sprint's marketing chief also said early Sprint 5G phones, this might be a reason not to rush to get a 5G phone, early Sprint 5G phones may not be compatible across networks.
That's because there's not like a unified, like we're not sure what, like T-Mo is doing, I think 600 megahertz and something else spectrum for their 5G network. AT&T, everybody is doing different.
Sprint doesn't have the spectrum, doesn't have that super high frequency spectrum. They weren't.
Well, and they don't need it. They can deploy it over.
They're going to put it on their mid-band spectrum.
Yeah.
Is that CDMA stuff still out there in the wild?
Yes. CDMA is still out in the wild. My Verizon phone still will fail over to CDMA network every now and then. I think so.
I thought Verizon did, but I wasn't 100% sure. Sprint and Verizon were CDMA networks, but it's kind of like when you get in a bad area and you go down to 3G. You go down from LTE to 3G to 2G to no G.
Is there 2G?
I don't know, maybe not. But they slowly start. There is this kind of lagging tail that they slowly get rid of over time.
Yeah, I know that a couple carriers have gotten rid of their 2G or have announced sunsets for it. But yeah.
Sprint says they will launch on this mid-band spectrum, which is faster than LTE waves, doesn't travel as far, which, by the way, it's slower than millimeter wave, but travels farther.
Mm-hmm.
And Sprint also says it'll rely on massive MIMO to improve its network capacity. Multi-in,
yeah,
multi-out.
Yeah, that's another. So that's another issue, because you can massive MIMO is basically the number of antennas you have in your handset. You have to have it on your handset, and you have to have it on the tower or wherever your base station is.
Okay.
In phones today, are we at 2x2, maybe 4x4, and I don't see a lot of devices, especially handsets, getting like 16x16.
There's
MIMO.
Not a lot of room for that. You've seen these massively MIMO, you know, the Mu MIMO Wi-Fi routers. They look like spiders.
Yeah, they're crazy big. Yeah. And I mean, it's cool for a gateway, for example, if you want to stick something out in the middle of a field or, you know, maybe on top of a car or an ambulance. But not, I mean, this was, it's like satellite all over again.
Sprint says it will launch the 5G hotspot. So you're going to see, I think everybody do that. That's what Verizon's doing right now. And that's for home and office, not for mobile. So really, this is a mess.
It's not a mess. It's just, we're using the phrase 5G to mean like three different things.
Right. Right. It's confusing to consumers, that's for sure.
It is, but, you know, consumers...
We're not all Hermione.
Well, no, and consumers, you know, I wouldn't buy. So here's my take for your consumer take. I wouldn't buy a 5G phone expecting anything awesome, nor would you need it anytime this year and probably well into next. At the end of 2020, if you wanted to upgrade, you're going to get something out of it. But I don't think this year you're going to get a lot out of having a quote-unquote 5G phone.
And see, I was thinking earlier with my whole power user discussion, it seems like the 5G talk is still marketing speak and marketing towards people being able to quote-unquote do more, you know, as if they use their phones to do everything. Yeah. And no,
I think if you were buying 5G for fixed wireless, I think that's something you could buy today. And within the next year, like if you hate your cable provider, it's going to provide another option for cable, basically.
Good.
Okay.
But it'll be from someone like Verizon. So you're like,
right. Still will be somebody you hate, but it just.
A different someone you hate.
It'd be just different someone you hate. All right. So there's the 5G explainer. It was, it was all over Mobile World Congress. But again, this is, you know, it's up in the air as to how this is going to come out and how it's
going to
work.
Thank you, Miss Stacy.
Yes. Thank you.
You got to stop calling me Miss Stacy.
Hermione Higginbotham.
Are, like, throwing me out there, man. Hermione, one, I'm married. Two,
Ms.
I'm not 12.
Ms. Stacy.
Ms. Stacy.
Every new flagship will have a 5G variant of the phones showed at Mobile World Congress. Like the Galaxy S10 5G, the V50, the LG V50 5G, the Xiaomi Mi Mix 3 5G.
Whoa.
So, but don't try. Your advice, I think, is right. Unless you're planning to keep this phone for 5 years, you probably shouldn't buy it now.
I mean, it's not worth the cost. If the cost premium comes from 5G,
right,
then just say, buy a folding phone instead.
And then, and this is from Tom's Guide, where they had a great article on 5G stuff. Caitlin McGarry and Adam Ismail, the 5G takeaways of Mobile World Congress. And one of them was, expect weird and wonderful devices.
So, I liked that one.
Yeah. This is the HTC Hub. This is the one that I think Sprint said it would be offering later this year. It's a hotspot, but it's got a big 5-inch display on it. So it can stand on its own. It's got Android Pie. It can stream media, play games, even run apps. There's an Ethernet cable you can plug into other devices if you want to get even faster speed. Bluetooth connectivity for controllers. I'm glad HTC has found something to do.
I wonder if there's a microphone on it.
Oh, there's definitely a going on? It's a Snapdragon 855. It's a hotspot with heart. That's what I'm going to call it. A hotspot with heart. Oh, yeah, Google's getting in trouble with the microphone thing. Stacey just added a little article to our rundown. I guess Congress, we talked about this last week. People found out that the Google Home,
it's the microphone on the Nest Guard box. It's part of the Nest security system.
The Nest, it's like the base unit, right, of the mm-hmm. Nest. And now Congress is calling. There's a letter from the United States Senate. Congress is calling on Google to explain to me, Google, what else you got microphones on. And we gave them a pass last week, as you may remember.
We did. But this is actually a good point. If you should like to do it, you should go to the StaySan IoT, because I did a consumer bill of rights for connected devices. And one of the things we talked about, I think we may have talked about this last week, was that you should disclose that you have a microphone on there. And there's some other things that you should do. And that's what this is the Commerce Committee of the U.S. Senate is asking them, hey, have you always had this?
Right.
Why? What happened? How did you not list it?
Right. What changed?
And my favorite is Google aware of similar omissions in the technical specs for other Google products? Oh, yeah.
Wow.
What else has got a mic, Google? And has Google been aware of any third party using the Nest Secure microphone for any unauthorized purchase or purpose, not purchase?
The senators have asked Google to respond by March 12th, and they are asking for an in-person briefing to committee staff.
It must be awesome to be a congressperson.
And say,
I would love to just be able to be like, Sundar, come here.
Get here. Get over here. Sundar.
I have some questions for you.
Get over here. You're in trouble, boy. You're in trouble, buddy. Get over here. Sundar.
Most of the time, they don't know an iPhone from a Pixel, so I don't know if I want to be a congressman.
I think Congress is getting a little smarter.
This is the
Commerce Committee and the Subcommittee on Communications, Technology, Innovation, and the Internet. John Thune, Roger Wicker, Jerry Moran. They're getting better. I think they're not as dumb as they used to be.
Could this be a situation where Google just please the Fifth Amendment?
Yeah, no, I don't think you're allowed. I think you're allowed to do that. Maybe, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. Interesting. Google is also facing the Supremes. You remember that Google lost in an Oracle-Google lawsuit. Oracle, this one went on forever and ever.
Android, right?
The question boiled down to something really off target, but this was the best that Oracle could do, which was, is it a copyright violation to use a published API? And of course, if you know that the thanks to the ruling, which said, yeah, it is, that violates copyright, you can copyright an API, that kind of breaks the notion of APIs, because APIs, like, we have a public API for our podcasts. We want people to write software that uses the public API. That's the purpose of an API. But Oracle is saying, because they couldn't get Google just on, you know, copying Java. That didn't work out. They lost on that. So they said, well, okay, but Java's API is copyright, and Google emulated it, writing a completely compatible language that uses the Java API, and the courts upheld Oracle's rights there. So now it's in front of the Supreme Court, and dozens of briefs are coming in from the tech community in Google's favor. Mozilla, Microsoft, Python, Red Hat, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, 65 intellectual property scholars, among others, because everybody understands that APIs and the use of APIs is kind of critical to the entire way the software industry works.
The lingua franca of the internet.
Perfect. Damages, we don't know what the damages are. At one point, Oracle was asking for $8.8 billion. The lower court has not yet ruled on damages. But I don't think it's the money at this point for Google. Oracle General Counsel said, despite Google and its amicis, those are the people, the amicus curiae briefs that are coming in its favor, despite...
Oh, is that how you say that?
Well, amicus curiae, yes.
Okay.
I don't know if it's a Michi or a Miki. When I was learning Latin, so church in church Latin, it would be a Michi, a soft C. But when I was learning Latin, the whole new thing, and this was like 100 years ago, but the whole new thing was, oh, no, C's are hard. So it's not Cicero, it's Cicero, which nobody liked. Ooh. So a Miki, and unless something's changed, and if you're a Latin scholar, please contact me.
I had no idea how to say the words. I only know how to spell them. Yeah. So I'm like, oh,
amicus is friend, curiae is of the court.
So I love the fact that Latin has a gif discussion happening.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
So instead of Caesar, it's Kaiser.
Kaiser.
Oh,
Kaiser. Okay.
Like the roll. Yeah,
like the Kaiser roll. I don't think that's
Guess
anyway,
he's hungry.
I said Amici because that's the Italian or the church Latin pronunciation, but I think actually it's probably Amici. Anyway, I will read it again. I don't even know if Oracle's General Counsel knows how to pronounce it. Despite Google and its Amici's overheated rhetoric predicting the end of the software industry, it has continued to thrive. Well, that's true. With increased R&D spending, higher investment in innovation, and hiring demand outpacing supply. In other words, he says there's no issue. The arguments are without merit, and we want our billions. The court will decide. Now, there's an example of a Supreme Court that I think is woefully inadequate to decide this one. But we'll find out.
They're pretty smart.
They're smart. Oh, I'm not saying they're smart, but do they know from an API? I hope
In the chat room said, you know, we're talking about APIs like web services, and this is about web APIs as... just, I don't remember what they said.
Well, you know,
and
I mean,
I didn't know there was a difference. So I'm sitting here thinking about this. I'm like, the language of the API.
Yeah, as you know, Android was originally Java, and when Google got in, you know, Oracle said, yeah, we let Java's licensed for free, and you can use it for free, but we don't intend for you to make this massively successful commercial product, and so we want some. They lost. And that, and then they said, well, okay, but, and then Google in the meantime started to rewrite it in create a Java-like, I think was it Dalvik? A Java-like language that stuff could be written in that would have compatible APIs because otherwise everything breaks. And then Oracle said, no, you can't use, even if you're not using Java anymore, we still got you because you're using our copyrighted API in your new Java clone. Right. So, I mean, on the one hand, I kind of understand.
I get that.
Yeah, I mean, what is an API? It merely says when a program sends you this message, you respond with this message. That's really fundamentally right. All yes. It is. Should that be? Could you copyright how you respond to a message and what the mess? How the message is formed? How the query and answer are formed? Can you copyright that? Seems to me not. I don't know. It's complicated. So the reporter checked in with Professor William McCarthy of the Greek and Latin Department of Catholic University. See, never ask a Catholic. The professor said, amicus. So it's
that's how I thought it was said.
Amici.
Amicus.
So the K is, the C is hard, but the emphasis is on the first syllable.
Amicus.
So I don't think anybody from that Roman era is here to tell us how they pronounced it, but so you know, presumably they've got clerks who know what's going on, and some of these guys may understand. And you know, you're right. I mean, it can be explained to them in a way that they understand it, and then they can rule on it. So maybe they are.
Oh, holy cow! Someone in the chat room just threw up a William Sapphire column all about this from 1997.
It's called "When a Justice Needs a Friend." You got a friend.
Wow.
There are two kinds of legal kibitzers. Those who pronounce amicus, amicus, and nobody pronounces amicus, which is how I initially, and those who pronounce it amicus. Each submits a brief as an outsider, ostensibly not with an interest in the outcome of the case, but as a friend of the court, in Latin, amicus curiae. You know, this is why I miss William Sapphire. Justice Breyer had his own pronunciation. He said, amicus.
Okay. Well, see, now I don't feel bad. I feel much better. Because I always said amicus. But apparently...
William McCarthy is... Oh, this is the one who agreed Briar pronunciation was non-standard. The professor preferred amicus. Amicus.
I'm sorry. This totally derailed.
No, this is exactly what Twig is all about. Brian Garner, editor of the Dictionary of Modern Legal Usage and editor of the 7th edition of Black's Law Dictionary. Says it sounds like amicus curiae. What? Oh, Lord. Justice Breyer adopted an Anglo-Latin pronunciation. It will make any Latin teacher apoplectic, but it has English and American history behind it. And in the end, that matters more than how Cicero or Cicero might have mouthed the phrase.
So glad I have no use for this word in my vocabulary.
It goes on. There's a lot more. I don't know if he really comes to a conclusion. I used to love those articles about things like that.
Words.
I love words. You love words. You're a writer. You got to love words.
I'm a reporter. I never call myself a writer.
Really?
Never.
And why is that? You don't like to write.
So you
like to report, though.
I do. I love learning.
Yeah.
I'm a wonk, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hermione.
I'd never heard that phrase until today.
Really? Yeah, no, she's a wonk. It's a good thing. Being a wonk, in my mind, is right up there with being a geek.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
What if I'm a wonk who plays D&D? What does that make me?
Then you're a wonky geek. Wow. Or a geeky wonk.
Okay. I was just curious.
No, you can be both. A geek, in my opinion, is anybody who has an outsized enthusiasm for a narrow slice of stuff, usually technology, but it could be comic books.
5G.
5G. You're
anything.
Yeah. And a wonk, in my opinion, if William Sapphire were here, we'd ask him. But in my opinion, a wonk is somebody who really loves the nitty-gritty details of everything and studies it and will be glad to tell you. So you're a geeky wonk.
Excellent. So what should we talk about next? Do we want to talk about the Huawei thing that was overshadowing mobile?
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten people writing to me saying, shame on you, Leo, for falling for, you know, the U.S. government's propaganda against Huawei. But I think it's hard to turn your back on numerous convictions or arrests anyway now on spying and accusations of spying. And I think there's a lot of evidence that Huawei isn't maybe the upstanding global citizen one would hope, but is much more likely in the thrall of the Chinese government. I still don't know if the calls to, you know, abandon Huawei 5G gear is a political move. I tell you how we'll know, though. It looks like the president has now indicated he wants to sign a trade agreement with China. He's backing down considerably. And if he does, and all of a sudden the calls to get rid of Huawei disappear, well, then you'll know.
Yes, or if Huawei just tells him they have 6G, then, you know.
Yeah, he's anxious to get 6G.
He can have it. Wi-Fi, baby. Yeah. New name, just to screw everything up.
And Huawei says there's no evidence of the claims against it. Somebody in the chat room says just because it's propaganda doesn't mean it's not true. All of that is true, and the problem is it's just very hard to know.
Huawei's China, the Chinese government had funded Huawei. There are close ties.
Yes.
And China is not a transparent country, and it does have a pretty good stranglehold on its corporate leaders. So it's really hard to assess these claims.
And I think you could safely say that even if today Huawei is not spying, that the nature of being a Chinese company with investment from the Chinese government is if they were asked to spy down the road, they wouldn't really even be able to say no.
Although AT&T did the same thing. So
spied on us.
Right.
Let the NSA into the AT&T wire closet.
Right. So, I mean, yes, it's different, but it's also not unprecedented that a government would come to its companies and be like, hello.
So
we're knocking.
Speaking at Mobile World Congress, Guo Ping, who I guess is the chairman of Huawei, said, we don't do bad things. I think that was Google's motto for some time. He's the rotating. He's the According to the CNBC, he's the rotating chairman. I can do that, too. I have a rotating chair. But he's the rotating chairman of the world's largest provider of telecommunications equipment, Huawei, where most 5G equipment comes from, although the U.S. has been pressuring allies not to use Huawei's technology in its 5G networks. Guoping said, to build a system that we can all trust, we need aligned responsibility, unified standards, and clear regulations. We can proudly say 5G is safer than 4G, and as a vendor, we don't operate carriers' networks, and we don't own carrier data. In a way, he's pointing to the fact that at least one carrier in the U.S. was handing over your information, not to the Chinese government, but to our government.
Well, in there are, like Ericsson, for example, does deals with carriers where they will operate their network for them.
Ah, so there is a difference there.
Yeah, there is a distinction to be made between AT&T, which owns and operates its network and buys the gear from them, and somebody who doesn't.
There is a precedent for Huawei executives getting hot under the collar. I remember at CES last year, not this most recent one, but
okay, well, that was legit, man. They like just suddenly pulled his big announcement.
Yeah, he was about to get on stage and say the Huawei P20 phone, which is a great phone, which I have. Paul Thurrott uses. I didn't realize that. Was about to announce that they were going to have a carrier deal in the U.S. with Verizon and AT&T under pressure from the administration. Verizon and AT&T pulled out, and Huawei's chairman got up on stage furious, livid, because instead of making a great announcement, he had to say, you're not going to be able to get this phone in the U.S. You're not going to be able to get the Huawei folding phone either, because they don't sell phones in the U.S. because of that. They say, without a carrier, there's no point in us trying to market a phone in the U.S. We need a carrier partnership.
And that's true. I mean, remember, there was a smartphone before the iPhone. It was the Nokia phones, and nobody in the U.S. had them because the carriers wouldn't subsidize them.
Right.
And this was back in that day. So It makes sense.
Here's, by the way, your consumer rights bill of rights. And do you have on there, probably should have on there something about, and it won't let the Chinese government spy on you?
You know, I didn't do that because this was a little bit more generic.
Right. But it is things to look for. Like, you should know. There should be disclosure. What sensors are in there? Especially if... Oh, hi, Stacy.
Sorry.
Especially... No. Every site does that. Every site does that. A little pop-up saying, sign up for my newsletter, even though I'm already signed up.
So the ones that, like, yes, disclose all of your sensors, but things like an expiration date for devices. So when are you going to stop patching them?
That's really important. Good. More than an expiration date, a commitment to continue to patch them to that point.
Right.
You know, a commitment. That's what I want. I want to know when you're going to stop supporting it, but I want your commitment that you will support it right up to that day, the bitter end. And Microsoft does that with their operating systems.
Yeah, well, the IoT devices are like, they're coming in, and they do it for enterprise. So Microsoft and Google and even Qualcomm will support enterprise chips for 7 to 10 years. But they don't do it for consumer devices, which I feel is...
So we had a really good sponsor. I really liked them, Lighthouse. It had a time of flight sensor in it. It had camera in it. It had night vision. It had a lot of AI in it. I used it, and they just went out of business. I'm sad to say. They did the right thing, though. They refunded every owner.
I had the CEO on my podcast. We talked about time of flight sensors.
Yeah. That's an example of a company with all the right ideas with a great product. And what he said was, I think it was too expensive because it was like over $300. And I think
it
was competing against, you know, I mean, for crying out loud, you're competing now against the Wisecam for $20. And people just couldn't see their way to spending that much money and then subscribing to a service as well.
Yeah.
All right.
But if you were a Lighthouse, if you did buy a Lighthouse, especially if you bought it because I said how good it was, which it was, Alex has written a post at light.house, and they did commit to refunding everybody some money. So I presume that I hope they've contacted you and said something about it. Now I have this great Lighthouse, which I'm going to put in my museum of defunct
technology. Tech,
yeah. I wish there were some way to keep it working, but without the back-end service, it just there's nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I would say the other thing I put in there that I want to make a plug for is two-factor authentication for connected devices.
Absolutely. You know, wish they would do that.
Nest does it. Chamberlain for the MyQ does it. I'm looking for other devices that do it. So we'll see if that's...
What you're saying when you're saying do it, it means when you log into your Nest, you know, my Nest Home website, you need a password and a second factor, which is through an authenticator.
Yes, completely and agree when you that. Link your devices to an account. And this actually, like, there was a rash of stories recently about Nest cameras getting hacked, but they weren't hacked. It's just that someone's password on the Nest camera, they used it in multiple places, and right. someone then got into it.
Exactly.
Is that hacking?
No. And had they had two-factor, it wouldn't even have mattered. So exactly. use a different password all the time and use two-factor. You know, I can't think of a single router manufacturer that has two-factor.
No.
And there are a lot of routers.
I should tell Eero, hey, Nick Weaver,
yeah.
get on that.
Well, I think probably you should write a letter to Jeff Bezos now that he owns a company.
Has the deal closed yet?
It was I don't know. Probably not. But... It takes a while. These things take a while. Yeah, that's a perfect example. Eero should, because Eero is managed over the network. So that's really important that you have that kind of security.
And I can do things with Eero, such as block devices on my network.
Right.
I can
right.
see all kinds
There are a lot of routers that don't have that, or don't you turn off that remote administration, the WAN administration. But Eero kind of requires it. And many mesh routers do require it. Plume does that. Orbi does not do that. Orbi's more like a traditional router.
They're not a real mesh system.
No, they're real. Well, they are. Wow. You have a dog there, too?
That's my dog.
The dog
That's the
was
same
a
dog.
Fan of Orbi.
It travels with me.
He loves those. He loves his Orbis. Yeah, but I do think routers, if they at least if they require wide area network administration, should have two-factor. I agree with you 100% on that, Stacey. They also, if they have data, how long, you know, who gets access to the data and how long it's kept? Very, very important. That should be in the privacy policy, obviously. I love the expiration date. I think that's really good. Do you anticipate that as time goes by, you'll add new clauses to this agreement?
I hope so. I think there are lots of things that I'm hoping people will say, hey, we should totally have this too.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Demand it of them. Hermione
I'm really
says
sorry,
so.
Guys. Hold
oh,
on.
I don't care. Barking dog. Well, I'll tell you what. While Stacy feeds the visitors to the dog, I'll tell you a little bit about our sponsor for today, Capterra. This Week in Google, brought to you by Capterra. Capterra is a great company if you are looking for software for your business. So this is a you know, an issue. You can, consumer software, there's plenty of places to go to read reviews and find the software and ask friends and stuff. But business software, it's a bigger expense. You're going to run your business on it. And it's hard to figure out what the best business software is. Sometimes people Google it, but that just gives you a kind of a dump of all kinds of things that aren't necessarily related. If you're, let's say you have a, I don't know, a veterinary office in honor of Stacy's dog, and you want software to run it, what would be the best way to find veterinary office management software? Capterra. Capterra.com. It's a free service. It has over 700 specific categories of software, everything from project management to email marketing to yoga studio management software. But the thing I love best, there are a few things I really like about Capterra besides the fact that it's free. There are more than 750,000 reviews from actual users, and they're really good with those reviews. They really vet them, so those are reviews you can trust. Plus, they have a really easy way to find the software you want, find the various versions, narrow it down with check boxes to say, well, no, I have to. It has to be online, or no, it has to be on premises, or it has to be able to do email as well. It has to be able to make appointments. Whatever it is you're looking for, narrow it down, and then compare them head to head. Couldn't be easier. This will really simplify your search. If you're looking for business software, join the millions of people who use Capterra every month to find the right tools for your business, no matter what it is you need. It's the leading free online resource, and you can check it out right now at capterra.com. There really is no business software that's not on there. It's amazing. capterra.com/twig. Go there just so they know you heard it on Twig. Capterra.com/twig. And make this the year you get the right software. Stop suffering with old line of business software when you get something modern, new, that works great. Capterra, even if you're in a weird line of business or you have weird needs, they'll have it. Capterra.com/twig. Stacy has calmed the beast.
I'm not sure about that, but we'll see.
The beast has been tamed.
I shut the doors against the beast.
So YouTube's been going through a weird thing. You know, for a long time on YouTube, I think we were somehow whitelisted. They thought we were a news organization, and we are, I think. And we didn't get context strikes against us. And then something changed in the Content ID system last week. And it wasn't just us. There are a lot of weird content strikes. We got MacBreak Weekly got pulled down because we showed and talked about an Apple ad in the middle of the show. But then Linus on Tech's podcast took down his own podcast for Content ID. I don't even know how that works. So I think there's something weird going on. If you are at YouTube, can you whitelist us so that we don't? Because we got another one. We got another ding that didn't even make sense. It was completely out of nowhere. And I feel like the Content ID system, probably because YouTube has been going under such heat. Here's a new one. This is from the Washington Post. A pediatrician, a Florida doctor, who's got the great name Free Hess, found instructions for suicide in videos on YouTube Kids.
Holy crap.
She says, minutes into the clip from a children's video game, a man appeared on the screen offering instructions on how to kill yourself. I was shocked, Hess said, noting that since then the scene's been spliced. That scene has been spliced into several more videos from the popular Nintendo game Splatoon on YouTube and YouTube Kids. YouTube Kids is specifically aimed at children, supposedly safe for children.
Yeah, that's not great.
I don't want to trigger anybody, so I won't talk about what the clip has, but it's extremely detailed and totally inappropriate. She says, I think it's extremely dangerous for our kids. Yeah. And telling the Washington Post, I think our kids are facing a whole new world with social media and internet access. It's changing the way they're growing and it's changing the way they're developing. And I think videos like this put them at risk. It's not clear why this YouTube personality, Filthy Frank is his name, did this, but his fans have been known to put him in memes and other videos.
It could just be just for the lulz, you know?
It is probably.
There's sick people
out there.
Because I've got my daughter, she downloaded some, I can't think of the name of it right now. It's a character building app, and that is fine. There's censored chat that we talked about, but the YouTube videos, which when she plays any game, she's constantly on the YouTube videos for that game, are crazy disturbing. It's like someone was like, oh, kids love this. Let's use it to really screw with their heads. So we did a deal where she does not watch those YouTube videos and she can have the app.
We gave YouTube a pass last week because...
No, we didn't. On the pedophiles?
Well, it's not that... It's just that it's hard. Well, we gave them a half a pass. Okay. I think it's hard to police YouTube. It's just so massive. I mean, clearly we want them to do a better job. And they want to do a better job. I mean, they don't want this stuff showing up in YouTube Kids any more than they want the pedophile comments to show up on innocent videos of children. That's not something, I mean, you can't accuse them of wanting that. Maybe they need to work harder on stopping it.
Hire some more people to train these algorithms that are
well,
out there,
but you saw you know? The, you know, this is the problem. We call for that. And then you saw the article from, oh my God, Casey Newton writing in The Verge on the horrific lives led by Facebook moderators. The trauma floor, the secret lives of Facebook moderators in America. Just horrific. It's a job nobody wants. Nobody should have to do. There are 1,000 people doing this for Facebook in Phoenix, 15,000 around the world, and they see the worst. I mean, it's worse than being a cop. They see the worst.
stuff. You feel for those people because they end up, I mean, they could potentially end up being desensitized too. It's just,
well, and Casey starts with talking about a specific worker who was having panic attacks because of what she saw. I don't want to, again, it's too graphic. I don't want to talk about it, but the stuff she saw made her nuts, made her just, I mean, people being murdered.
People are awful.
But again, that team of 1,000 people are needed. They are
desperately needed.
Well, but think about how many hours of content. It's like 36 hours for every hour of content is uploaded, or 36 hours of content is uploaded to YouTube.
Every minute. It keeps going up, obviously.
People can't keep up with that. So how do we figure this out? Because it is a problem, and it's running away from us. And we can figure this out. We just maybe it results in more legit takedowns. I don't know.
Casey also points out that moderators make, and at least the Phoenix moderators make, $28,800 a year, while the average Facebook employee has a total compensation of $240,000.
You got to be kidding me.
Yeah. And I think there's a high level of PTSD, as you might imagine. And once they leave the company, there's no support for that from anybody. There is a counselor on duty, but only for part of the day. It doesn't sound like a good job.
Well, that's on Facebook, in my opinion.
Yeah, you're making a lot of money. You can pay them better. You can help them. You can support them.
You know, I think I was on this week in Google. Where I discussed talking about Apple and how you have the executives that make $1 gazillion. You have the sales team that makes $1 gazillion as far as trying to sell services and whatnot. But then you go to the Apple store and those folks are not making a lot of money. But
well, look at Amazon, where there's an even greater gulf.
Right. You know, but all of those people at the bottom of that food chain, they have some serious value there and they should be compensated for it. Now,
this is America. This is how it works.
Yeah, right? I understand people have college degrees and experience and education and all of that can warrant having extra wages. I get that. That's why I went to college. But at the same time, it shouldn't be such a huge gap when you got people staring at a screen of just disgusting content and trying to protect the eyeballs of my hard-headed kids from seeing it out there accidentally. You know, those people should. Leadership should look at that and fix that from a compensation standpoint.
It seems unfair, but this is life in, you know, a capitalist society. On the other hand, I would submit to Facebook that it's important to do a better job of this, because the upshot of this, and YouTube too, is that you will lose customers because people won't let their kids look at Facebook. They don't want to. I'm not on Facebook. I'm not one near a Facebook. I very rarely go to YouTube. And whatever I do, I never read YouTube comments. So this hurts your business.
Yeah.
And they really, if you can't get to them out of humanity, and you know, I'm a business owner. I pay my employees terribly, but that's business. No, I don't pay them. I actually, what I do is I don't know anything about what they get paid. My CEO, my business partner, my wife does that, and she doesn't tell me. So I can say, when I'm brought up in court or for in front of Congress, I could say, well, I don't know. You'll have to ask.
Lisa. I don't have to watch anything quite as bad as
it's almost as bad.
Close.
And you may have PTSD.
I mean, you have to have us arguing over Latin pronunciations of words, which I mean,
he's a Harvard man. He loves that kind of stuff, I've heard.
He already knows. He's like,
no, as a, you know, I'll tell you, because I spent my whole life until very recently, till I started my own business as an employee. I think I am trying to be a better employer. I want to be the employer that I wanted when I was an employee. But honestly, it's America. I mean,
it's still a business.
You got to pay minimum wage, but that's about it. So I think the way to appeal to Facebook and YouTube and other companies and Twitter, I would guess you throw them in there too, is to appeal to their greed. appeal to their bottom line and say, look, this is going to hurt you. It is going to hurt them, isn't it?
See, this is why we need metrics above and beyond profits to measure how corporations are. We have to measure the externalities and the costs associated with
what people... Well, you're just a socialist.
What? Huh? That's not socialism.
It doesn't have to be socialism for me to call you a socialist. You understand that, right?
Right.
Okay.
Can I call you a Nazi?
Yeah, absolutely. You know how it works.
Is that the next level? Socialist, Nazi?
There you go. Perfect. Fascist, socialist. That's perfect. Mm-hmm. We live in a terrible world. I wish we could fix this. I do. I really do. Most people are good, aren't they? Yes, they are, Ant. I know you know that, Ant. I know you believe that.
I'm not going to say most.
Oh, really? You don't think it's more than 51%?
Ooh. I can't say that. I see a whole lot of stuff, brother. I'm just fortunate that I deal with, you know, more than 51%.
Yes, try to stick around stick with the good ones. Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's even more depressing.
Yeah, let's take some cheery news. I like to believe that
Well, how about this Wall Street Journal article that talks about an app called Flow that women use to monitor their menstrual cycles in order to get pregnant and things like that. Turns out Flow has code in it from Facebook that even if you're not a Facebook subscriber, even if you don't have the Facebook app, even if you're not logged in, it tells Facebook when you're menstruating, among other things.
So Bloomberg did this story like 2 or 3 weeks ago, but yes.
Oh, well, let's give credit to Bloomberg then.
Bloomberg had period tracking apps or fertility tracking apps share more data than you may think.
And the Times has been doing articles like that as well. Yep.
So, yeah, this is part of that, hey, before having a clear and easy way to share what data goes out to what people is, I mean, really, that should be a minimal standard.
The Journal
hired
somebody to test this. They found, for instance, Instant Heart Rate, which is the most popular heart rate app on iOS, sends a user's heart rate to Facebook immediately after it's recorded. Realtor.com, which is a real estate app, which, by the way, is owned by a subsidiary of the Wall Street Journal, or actually the parent corp, News Corp, sends the location and price of listings that you view, noting which ones were marked as favorites, to Facebook. Facebook's got a lot of data, don't they? And the thing is, there's no way to stop that because if you're using, it doesn't say it explicitly. You won't even know.
That's crazy.
I read a EULA the other day from a product that was sent to me to review. And I'm glad I read the EULA first because it confused me. So I've just put the product down.
Yeah.
You mind if I read two lines?
Yeah, let's hear it.
All right. So it says, and I changed the company's name in there. It says, you own personally identifiable user-generated data. ABC company can't use it without your consent.
Oh, that's okay, good.
Great.
Yeah, yeah.
Then it says, you grant ABC company a revocable, non-exclusive, worldwide, royalty-free license to reproduce, distribute, transmit, publicly perform, publicly display, digitally perform, modify, create, derivative works of, and otherwise use personally identifiable user-generated data.
Oh, that's hysterical. So they start by saying, without your consent, we can't do anything. Can we have your consent?
The next sentence.
In the next sentence. They don't.
Well, at least
nobody,
it's right there.
Yeah. Well, they know nobody reads it. Yeah. At least it's right there. But why even bother to say we can't without your consent? And then.
So why aren't you telling us what the product name is?
I guess I could, but no, it's just not my style.
Yeah. Instagram got in a lot of heat because Instagram wanted a similar rights to your photos, mm-hmm. right?
Mm hmm.
I mean, this isn't uncommon. And I think, in defense of this, lawyers write these because you always, when you write a contract, take the broadest rights you can because, you never know. You know, maybe we'll make a billboard ad out of your photo and then, we don't want any problem with that afterwards.
We wouldn't want to have to ask your permission first.
We got your permission. Don't you remember? You clicked okay.
Otherwise, it's not scalable.
Facebook did kill that Onavo app that we were talking about, the Android VPN app.
It was the VPN, right?
Yeah, they killed that. But, you know, honestly, and maybe this is cynical of me, but my reaction to this is, oh, yeah, as soon as they get caught, they kill it. But that doesn't stop them from doing something different. In fact, that's exactly what happened with Onavo when Apple said, you can't do that. They made a new app, just put the Onavo code into that and sold that on the iPhone or gave that away on the iPhone. So it doesn't encourage me when companies say, oh, gosh, oh, I'm so sorry. We'll never do that again because.
And again, I'm not one that's going to just totally balk at some of these companies having my data because I love what Google does for me in my day-to-day life, as far as keeping me squared away, knowing my habits and things of that nature. And, you know, hey, you got an appointment to go to here in a little while. You need to leave now. Go pick up your son because he's got to be there on time. And, you know, just I love that stuff. It really does help me out when they can feed in and pull useful information like that. The whole ad standpoint that people at these tech companies claim that they're doing it for, I never really see it. I never see targeted ads or anything like that. 9 times out of 10, I guess it's because of my VPN. But when it comes to some of the other stuff, as far as, you know, Google reading my email, that knows that, you know, my monthly bill for whatever service is due on such and such day, make sure your bank account is ready for that automatic draft. You know, I dig that to an extent.
Yeah, I mean, it's not all bad. It's not all bad. We just have to keep an eye on it and call them out like you just did. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
He didn't call them out. He did not tell us who it was.
I didn't call them out publicly, but I did email them back with the screenshot of the EULA because it was for a device that's going to be measuring things medically.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so, of course, I wanted to read it a little closer, and I took a screenshot of it, and I sent it to them, and I said, hey, so what's the deal with this EULA?
Good for you for reading it. I mean, most people, they know. Most people don't read them.
Whose dog was that?
That's little Jack. Somebody downstairs rung the doorbell. So the biggest, quote unquote, my smallest dog is deciding to bark.
He's not that small, I bet.
No, he's small.
Oh, okay.
He's a teacup chihuahua.
Oh, it's small.
The big dog doesn't bark unless he needs to.
Woof. It's always that way, isn't it? Big dogs never bark. Big dogs don't need to bark. It's true for humans, too, I think.
True.
Here's an IoT story. Ray Ozzie, you know that name. He helped create Lotus Notes, worked at Microsoft.
Oh, yeah, this story.
Yeah, he is creating a new company called Blues. What is it? Blues Wireless. The idea is that you might have an IoT device, but it does not have to connect to your Wi-Fi. It has its own connectivity built in on 3G or 4G. And so you could add the Blues Wireless module to your IoT device, and it would be more secure because everything's encrypted, secure credentials stored on the device itself. It's set up to connect wirelessly at the factory, so it's easier for users. I have a scale. I'm on this medically supervised diet, you know, program, weight loss program, and they sent me a scale, and I said, well, do I have to pair this to my phone or set it up on the internet? They said, no, it just sends it to us. Whenever I weigh myself, it just, boom, they get it. And I guess it's got to be using, cell connectivity somehow. It has a number, I guess, a serial number, and they just connect that to my account. And as soon as I weigh myself, it shows up in the app. It's like, oh, that was weird. So that's what this would do. Like a Kindle, right? Kindle has Whisper Sync. They plan to sell the modules at enough of a profit to cover the cost of the device and the wireless data. IoT devices, unless they're cameras, don't use a lot of data, right? That scale, it's not using a lot of data sending.
No, right? Usually it's like a kilobyte, less than a kilobyte of data.
It wouldn't be for cameras, obviously. That would not be cost prohibitive. Let's do the thing with the drums and trumpet. What do you say?
The Google changelog.
New stuff from Google. Ann hasn't been here since we started doing that.
Oh, no, my favorite segment. I love this.
Oh, you love the changelog. Apparently, yes. Stacy does not. Either that or she's wearing her invisibility cloak. building the Google Assistant on phones for everyone, everywhere. Google Assistant is now coming to the Android Messages app. It will do the kinds of things that Allo, I guess, did. Assistant is in Maps. You might have noticed that. Assistant everywhere. I think this makes a lot of sense. And of course, it makes it easier for Google to collect information, but we won't mention that. If you're chatting with your friends in the Android's Messages app and you need to quickly look something up, your assistant will help at any point. Just press the home button, long press the home button, and it will pop up. And it can even see what you're saying, I gather, and show you stuff then. That's how Allo worked. And that was really cool.
Yeah.
You would say, hey, let's go to dinner. What restaurant you want to go to? I don't know. How about Telly's? And then it would just pop up. You can make a reservation right in the messenger. That's good. Now that they've killed Allo, it's good to have.
It's convenient.
Yeah.
Really convenient.
I wish they'd fix their messaging platform because I'm a Google Fi user. I want to have a cross-platform messaging that I can use on my iOS and Mac as well as Android. And Android Messages does not do that, but Hangouts does. But that's really somebody told somebody I use Hangouts. They said, "What? That's still there? It's still around?"
Yeah, yeah. It's just barely hanging on by a thread.
Yeah,
Hangouts. I'm a Google Voice person.
Yeah, same problem. So
it's fairly convenient being able to access it over the web or whatever like that. But it still has its quirks from a messaging standpoint.
Now, thanks to Google Play services, Android devices running version 7 or later. We'll use FIDO 2 to let you use a fingerprint or PIN to log into various services. I think that's a great thing because, of course, on many phones now, you are doing biometric logins, and it would be really nice if those logins would extend to apps, websites, and other places. And apparently FIDO 2, that standard does have that, and that maybe soon you'll be able just to do that everywhere you go. FIDO 2 supports a variety of authentication methods. And it's also supported in Chrome, Edge, and Firefox. Developers do have to adopt the FIDO API to support the feature. Let's see, what else? Google says Android 1, that's the inexpensive version of Android. Android 1 activations grew very popular, 250%. Year over year. So people
that's
like.
That's awesome.
Isn't that good?
Yeah. I mean, Everybody can afford a $1,000 phone.
50% of the new entry-level Android devices are Android Go. Digital well-being tools also coming to more phones. Google Docs AI-powered grammar checker is coming to everyone on G Suite. G Suite is the paid business version. It's Grammarly, it ain't. Grammarly's our advertiser. But it's also the case, Grammarly it ain't, but it does have some nice features. So, for instance, if you write something is more likely not to do something, they'll suggest maybe you should say more likely to not. I would ask Stacy about it, but she's not a writer. She's a reporter, so.
That's right. I have an editor for those kind of questions. I pay her lots of money, so she handles those kind of things.
Did you watch the Oscars? Did you see the new Google Assistant commercials?
I didn't.
Well, good. Let's play them.
Okay. Wait, is this going to get you
probably
on YouTube?
But fortunately, some nice YouTube employee is going to make sure that we are whitelisted as a news organization.
Because three strikes is their policy there is really brutal.
No, you don't want to blow it. Here is, you don't mind if I play a commercial of yours, Google, do you really? Hey, Google, let's go to the movies.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
Oh, I love that.
Hello, Hal, do you read me? Hey, Google, open the pod bay doors.
Oh, I wish.
Let's go.
Okay, if you know 2001 A Space Odyssey, you'll get that.
Showing your photos.
Oh, no.
You should just go to City College. You know,
oh, these are all movies. I get it. And then to jail, and then back to City This is my, I saw this part. This is hysterical. So you remember Lady Bird, right? Was that the name of it? Oh, it's great. Mm-hmm. The opening scene, mom's talking to her daughter and driving her nuts. Eventually, her daughter hurls herself out of the moving car. She's going so crazy. But in this version, she instead asks Google Assistant to book her a Lyft ride.
Back to City College, learn to pull yourself up.
Your Lyft has arrived.
Everybody to do everything.
Are you ready?
Well yes. Played.
What door am I at?
Patio door. Police are on their way. See ya.
Oh, it just doesn't work. In what was that? Scream.
Scream. Yeah.
Just doesn't work if you've got a Nest camera, right?
Exactly.
Here's Jerry Maguire. Remember that great scene, Show Me the Money?
Oh,
Cuba,
yeah.
Cuba Gooding Jr.?
Show me the money.
Here you go.
By the way, I tried that immediately after that commercial, and it works. You can tell your assistant, show me the money. It'll show you the Dow Jones Industrial Average. I love that.
Of course it does.
Of course it does. So the theme of this is make Google do it. With Home Hub, Home Mini, and Pixel 3. And I'm glad the Ramones.
Hey. What's on my calendar today?
At 5:30 p.m., you have appear in Google commercial.
That's never going to happen. Mm-mm.
A little Deadpool humor. That is a good ad.
Yeah, that was. That's clever.
It was.
And then it's nice to do an ad that ties in with the movies when you're doing an ad on the Oscars. And just for the record, Spike Lee was robbed. As was Alfonso Cuarón. I really thought, and I think we talked about it last week, I really thought Roma would win Best Picture, and it would have been a big deal for the technology world because it would be a Netflix movie winning an Academy Award, a streaming first movie. And I actually think that might be why it didn't win, because...
Oh, well, that's true.
Yeah, there's no way the Academy is going to allow that to happen, right? But Black Panther could have won, Black Klansman could have won. Green Book is it's, you know, driving Miss Daisy for the 21st century.
That was so treacly.
Treacly is a good word. Treacly is a good word. I enjoyed it. I'm not saying I didn't enjoy it, but it was a little treacly. Kind of glossed over maybe some significant race issues in the 60s in the South. Maybe. I don't know.
Just maybe.
Maybe, just a little bit. Living the multi-dream by blending coding with a rap career.
What?
Brandon Torrey is a Googler. He works in the LA office on artificial intelligence, training computer models to better understand how humans use language, why we use certain words, or describe things in a certain way. But once he leaves the office, by day, Google employee. By night, let me just play a little... we're going to get another ding for this, are we? This is a little...
Also, yes.
A little Brandon Torrey. Brandon Torrey is living the multi-dream, spreading the word to the next generation. Oh, there
That's
it is. There it is, a multi-dream. So...
It ain't because you spend it, money or cause you bend it. Slide your feelings that needs explaining. No, this...
I like him.
Twice is how I've been seen. That you make easy conversation.
I don't know.
I'm sure my family would dig it.
I don't know if
it's a
hit.
Not my cup of tea, but I'm sure my family would dig it.
He says he got into technology after seeing Good Will Hunting, The Matrix, and Hackers when he was 13. He was a homeless teenager in Brockton, Massachusetts. Got support from his church. Went dumpster diving for parts to build his first computer. He spray painted it black. He recalls spending 12 to 14 hours a day during his teenage years in online forums, learning C, assembly, and Python. That's the good stuff. Got an EE degree in college, but he loved music, and he liked hip hop, but he decided once he got his EE degree, I'm packing it up. I'm moving to Atlanta. I'm going to try to break into the music industry. I want to be a star. So he bought a $1,200 van and moved to Atlanta after years of striving. Moved to Los Angeles, won a national songwriting competition, got to work with Timbaland,
or
as I pronounce it, Amicus, and started housing I'm really bad at rap names. I keep calling him 50 Cent, and I think it was you, Ant, who corrected me on that one. But he never got a hit, so he said, well, maybe that software engineering thing will work. And so it's actually really cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's still working on an album. And he says, I'm a cross between Jay-Z and Maroon 5. Oh, boy.
Ooh. No.
and by the way, he's got an iPhone, but it does look googly, right? And he wears Calvin's.
I was going to say he wears Calvin's.
Owen.
He's not coming.
Oh no.
No.
Oh no. What's going on?
He's got a good cinematographer. At least.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm not going to go on because he just dropped the Calvin's. So we'll stop right there and say that's the end of the Google changelog. There are not many Google programmers who could drop their Calvins on camera. Wow. I don't know. Any other stories that we missed before we wrap this guy up?
The FedEx delivery robots? Are we thinking those are cute?
These are repurposed. Aren't they like repurposed Segway wheelchairs?
Oh, are they?
I think so. I think they're based on the iBot, which is a mobility device designed to climb stairs and stuff for people in chairs. Yeah. So it is a scary looking beast there.
Wow. It's got LiDAR and a bunch of kids.
That's expensive. It's a FedEx same day bot. It's an innovation designed to change the face of local delivery and help retailers efficiently address their customers' rising expectations. So, AutoZone, Lowe's, Pizza Hut, Target, Walgreens, and Walmart. And they hope to test the bot in this summer in markets like, notice summer, not winter or during rain. In markets like Memphis, mayor of Memphis says, I think it's a good idea. Here's of course, they had to get on national television. Here is a same-day bot delivering a pizza to Jimmy Fallon.
The Tempest and his mini flyers.
No. This is, I guess we got to jump ahead to find the.
Two things are dominating MWC.
Who's that? Shut up. Okay. Okay. Is this the bot? No, this is this guy. This is Jimmy's tech segment. He's got a lot of weird stuff. She looks like she works for Google, doesn't she? Let's try it. Let's turn up the sound.
And we've got a package for you coming now, actually.
It's coming down the hall? Where is the robot?
Absolutely. It's on its way now.
Look at this thing. This is the future.
This is the future. Gosh. Jimmy Fallon said so.
This reminds me, if you saw The Americans, the CIA mailbot, or the FBI mailbot.
What can it deliver?
I did not see that. Does it wander the halls of the FBI with your mail?
It does, and someone hacked it.
I know you're a parent.
Ooh.
So if you're at home, you have a sick child.
It was a plot point on The Americans.
It can bring the medicine to you.
So you notice that they have taped off with caution tape the entire studio to make sure the bot doesn't accidentally wander. Oh, it can go over sand. Rocks.
Through the water.
Through the water. Come on, get up to the top, buddy.
Up some steps.
Can he do it? Can he do it?
He can do it.
It's so sad what we cheer for these days.
This is unbelievable.
This is cooler than an iPhone, I think.
You think so?
Yeah.
Oh, look, here comes.
You guys have some big news.
We
here comes
do.
The delivery.
Tomorrow we have our national unveiling. We're going to talk about all the national retailers that we've been partnering with to design this device. And again,
all right,
to
I'll stop it now. But you saw it at work. That's cute. That's the FedEx.
I'll never see
bot.
It.
No.
You'll never. People will beat it up before it gets anywhere.
That's the thing. I mean, it's only going to work in certain areas, obviously.
Yeah.
Elon Musk is a little bit of trouble.
I heard he was, but I didn't hear what he did, or I didn't really get a chance to go and look and see what he did or said.
He maintains that the information he tweeted was already part of their earnings. But the SEC was like, oh, we told you not to tweet anything about financials anymore. You're being held in contempt.
He tweeted 24 million people. See, this is it. I've been telling Elon to get off Twitter for years.
Yeah.
Now the SEC is asking a judge to hold Elon Musk in contempt because he violated the deal. He has till March 11th to explain why he should not be held in contempt. Does that mean jail time? Does it mean a fine? I don't know. I don't know.
So you all think it was okay for him to tweet what he tweeted when he tweeted it?
He didn't tweet anything. His contention is he tweeted something that had already been said in a prior earnings call. Now, the SEC is saying that they told him not to tweet about earnings, period. So this is kind of like when you're 4-year-olds, you're like, don't come out of your room. And they like throw something out. You're right. Like, I told you not to come out of your room. They're like, I didn't come out.
My dolly did.
Well, that was a very binary list of instructions. Hey, you can't talk about this. So I guess, they got a leg to stand on.
I think I'm guessing that tweets are starting to assume a lower standard of communication than an actual press release. I'm just thinking it should than a press release, a presidential proclamation. It should.
I would say
because it's just crap.
But Jeff Bezos did his announcement.
His divorce. He announced his divorce via a tweet.
And then he announced his Medium post where he like pointed out his sextortion thing in a tweet. And then the follow-up Medium post.
Well, so, I'm thinking of Matt Gaetz, the representative yesterday, who basically said to Michael Cohen, it would be a shame if anything were to happen to your family after you testify for Congress, which many thought that sounds a little bit like witness tampering. But I think legal experts that I saw said, well, it was a tweet.
You know, the argument that Trump is, whenever Trump tweets about things, you're like, oh, is he inciting violence? I don't know.
Is it a presidential proclamation? Does it have the weight of an actual presidential proclamation? Or is it just blowing off a little steam?
Well, I mean, this is the message, the Medium or whatever, blah, blah, blah.
I think you've got to consider where it is. But maybe not.
You have to consider who's saying it. I mean, if this is a direct, like... Twitter is not a private forum. So if Elon talks about something with his buddies,
it's in public. You're right.
You know, versus, I mean, that's kind of like TV. He wouldn't say that on television just because it's a limited number of characters and most people use it to talk about breakfast cereals. That doesn't mean
if you said something on Jimmy Fallon, would that?
It would count.
That would count as much as Twitter.
Batman's just as much of a joke as Twitter. So, yes.
Well, there goes your chance to get on Jimmy Fallon.
Oh, I was not.
Oh, and your dog is not happy. All right, let's wrap this up so Stacey can discipline her dog. I think he's in violation of SEC regulations and should go back to his
room. He is holding me in contempt.
Yes. Yes, he is. Stacey Higginbotham, we call her Hermione Higginbotham because she is so smart. Straight A student. She's at stacyonIoT.com. Sign up for the free newsletter. It's awesome. Oh, we didn't do our things yet. I'm so sorry, Stacy.
Do Ant's thing first because then I can shut my dog up.
Okay. Ant has a few things. We're going to let you do all of them. We love Ant. By the way, Ant Pruitt, we love you. You're the greatest. He's so calm. He's so collected. He's so sensible.
I try to be anyway.
In a world gone mad, Aunt Pruitt is a man you can listen to.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. What's your pick?
Things.
Yes.
First off, in honor of Black History Month, I want to give a shout out
the year.
To our friend, Baratunde Thurston, in his book, How to Be Black. If you haven't read that book, go get it.
It's awesome.
It's hilarious. It's thought provoking. It is all Baratunde. I mean, I really, really enjoyed that book.
He is the greatest.
But yeah, go check that out. I don't get anything for it, but it's worth sharing.
It absolutely, absolutely is. I have an autographed copy. I think he said to something like the whitest man I know, but I don't know. I didn't. Is that an insult? I don't know. I think he might have gotten engaged.
He got engaged.
He did. I don't know. Yeah. Is that? I don't know if it's public now. I'm sorry, yep. Bertone, if that was a secret.
Oh, no, he didn't hide it. It was public. He put it out there.
Yeah, I think he tweeted it or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, he put it out there in social, so it's public.
Yeah, we love Bertone. Congratulations, Bertone. It's great.
Definitely.
What else?
The second thing is the missus and I started a podcast, and
oh, look at that.
Just wanted to, you know, I wanted to be able to spend some more time with her because I spend a lot of my time at this desk trying to create content and handle SQL and stuff like that. And I thought it would be fun for her and I to sit down and just talk about everyday people doing everyday shh. I didn't want to curse.
Nice.
It's short form, you know, at the most 30 minutes long. And it's just any type of conversation that we're going to have here in the house. The only exception is there's mics in front of us. There's it's not planned. It's just, you know, it's everyday people and trying to take it away from all of the bad news that you hear in podcasts and all of the hate and just people trying to showboat and things like that. No, I'm just trying to bring it back to real world stuff that people can relate to.
Love it. What's your wife's name?
Phoebe.
I can't wait to hear that. Phoebe and Aunt. Everyday people doing everyday. Aunt and Phoebe. Nice.
Aunt and Phoebe.
We're having a good time with that. We haven't recorded this week's episode, but we'll get to that
soon.
How
do you plan it? Do you? Because I thought always that'd be fun to do a podcast with Lisa. Do you just go in and sit down or?
Dead serious. I say, hey, we're recording tonight. And it's a yes or a no. And if it's a yes, I turn around and she sits back there in that chair and I give her a mic. I sit here and turn around and face her, hit record and go. And nice. It would be nice if the dogs would shut up.
You could talk about that tonight.
Yes. But that's all it is. It's just real casual. It's for real. It's our everyday conversations. Nice. That's all it is.
And you have a YouTube channel. We should not forget. You used to do Friday night stuff. Do you still do that? Or
I haven't done that in a while because, you know, football season took it away.
Yep.
But now I've been trying to focus on building some playlists upon request. My recent playlist is for Premiere Pro people just getting started. I've done 2 videos. I have the 3rd one coming up next week. And it's just to get people started and get them comfortable with the interface and get out there creating some awesome content.
If you
go out there, subscribe and watch them.
If you ever want to have us pay you to do some reviews for our hands-on tech show, for a review show, I see you do a lot of reviews. We'd love to have you.
Sure.
Anytime you got something you want to review, let us know. You can have it on your channel and our channel.
I'll do that.
Yeah. We'll actually give you actual money.
That would be awesome.
$1.50. Yeah. Good. Cool. Thank you, Ant. It's always great to have Ant on. You can find out about his podcast, his YouTube channel, everything else he's doing at his website, antpruitt.com. ANTPRUITT. Pruitt Gruitt.
That's it.
AntPruitt.com. Thank you, Ant. Stacey Higginbotham has a podcast too, and we'll plug that in a moment. But first, A World Without Clouds.
Yeah. So I don't know if you guys saw this. It was in Quanta, which is like my favorite magazine because I'm a nerd. This was a supercomputer simulation that looked at climate change. And it talked about as the Earth warms, clouds basically might, in one simulation, disappear, setting off another precipitous rise in temperatures.
Eight-degree rise in temperatures.
But I just...
Yikes.
I was fascinated. I mean, because I read a lot about climate change and I think about this. But like in all of my imaginings of a world, and I'll tell you guys, I write random fiction sometimes about climate change and what happens next. I never thought about this. And I'm kind of sad that I hadn't. And now I'm like, oh.
Clouds cover 2/3 of the Earth's surface. Without them... would be sitting ducks.
Yeah.
So
well,
fortunately,
it's cyclical, right?
Well,
it is. There's a cycle. Well. I once did a
it
recommendation
has been up to
of
now.
Yeah. A recommendation of a book. It was called The End of the World, and it was by a geophysicist that talks about how, you know, the seven great cataclysms of Earth.
Right.
This, I think, was last year. And this kind of reminded me of that. So, you know, you guys, obviously, I'm really a cheerful person deep down inside as I think about the end of the world. So
cool.
That's it.
And this was a big supercomputer simulation that they did. And they got a result they didn't expect. That's what's kind of interesting.
Yes. Yeah. I'm always like excited about simulated training for AI, methodologies for science. Yay.
Quanta, Quanta magazine.org.
Yes.
Physics, mathematics, science. Biology, computer science. That sounds like a pretty good magazine to read.
Oh, it's awesome.
Awesome.
I mean,
awesome.
For me.
And so are you. Awesome. Stacey Higginbotham. Her IoT podcast is with Kevin Toefel. It goes out every Wednesday, I think, right? You do it Wednesday.
We do it Wednesday. It goes out Thursday morning.
Thursday morning.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought I'd get it Thursdays. I love their theme music.
Yes, it's got to be better than our theme.
It's got to be better than our theme music, that's for sure. Oh, well, I'm stuck with it now. Thank you, Stacey. You can also read her stuff at her website, stacyoniot.com, and make sure you subscribe to her newsletter, too. Aunt Stacey, you guys are great. Come back soon. Well, Stacey, I'll see you next week, I hope.
I was going to say, I'll be here next week, I think.
Aunt, you
unless
come
you,
back
unless
soon.
You don't invite me now.
No, you're always invited.
Anytime, sir.
Thank you. We do this show. This is This Week in Google, and we do it every Wednesday around 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. You can watch or listen live at twit.tv/live. We have audio and video streams there. If you do that, join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv, a fun place to hang out. Our community-run chat room, and our community mods do a great job of it. And I keep my hands off. I don't have anything to do with it. We also have downloadable versions of everything we do, on-demand video and audio, at our website, in this case, twit.tv/twig. And we are now on, I'm happy to say, Pandora, which is great. They've added podcasts, and this is one of them. So if you're a Pandora subscriber, you can get it there. You can get it on Spotify, Stitcher. Stitcher's long gone. Our first video stream. On Stitcher, on Slacker, Overcast, Pocket Casts, iTunes, Google, wherever you get your podcasts, make sure you subscribe to This Week in Google so you get every episode the minute it's ready. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Twig.
Bye-bye.